Welcome to the Ask the Expert show, where the expert educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Hello, and welcome to Ask the Experts. This is Lee Richards, and my guest today is Thomas Clemens. Good morning, Mr. Clemens. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Richards. How are you?
All right. Now that we got the Mr. and Mrs. out of the way, it's Thomas and Lee, okay?
Okay, great.
It'll make it a lot easier for us. And unfortunately, I haven't met you in person because of this darn virus. I always like to shake hands and have a face-to-face with people. But thank goodness for modern electronics, all right? Right. Tell us, first of all, the firm that you're with. You are an attorney.
Yes, correct. And the firm I'm with is Goldstein Mehta. We are primarily a criminal defense firm. Our office is in Philadelphia, Reed Logan Square building, which is at 1717 Arch Street. But we do practice, New Jersey and Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia as well.
Okay. And what is your website?
www.goldsteinmeta.com. And I'll spell that. It's www.goldsteinmeta.com.
Excellent. And most important, your phone number.
267-225-2545.
2545. Let me read that back. 267-225-2545.
Correct. Yes.
And we'll be giving that out many times before this time is over. So let's talk about you, Thomas. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, for instance.
Sure. So I'm from Philadelphia, the Northeast section in Mayfair. I went to Father Judge High School, which is an all-boys Catholic high school in Northeast Philadelphia. After that, went to St. Joseph's University for college. And a couple years later, while I was working in the day, I went back to Temple Law School in the evening and obtained my law degree in 2010.
Wonderful. So you did it the hard way, though. You know, you worked your way right through it. And you've picked up a lot of practical information, I'm sure, along the way. So now you specialize in criminal law. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. The areas we practice in are primarily criminal defense. And when I say criminal defense, I mean everything from the beginning stages, if someone's being investigated or thinks they, may need a lawyer in the very early stages of whatever may be taking place, all the way through to the end. After a conviction, if someone needs to appeal their case or file what's called a PCRA, Post-Conviction Relief Act, which I'll get into a little later. But everything in the area of criminal defense. We also will do some custody cases and personal injury cases as well.
Oh, so you do have the ability to do other things.
Correct, yes.
Well, that's good to know. You know, it's funny, when I see all the looters and everything, you know, in the wake of the riots and the protest and such, I have to scratch my head and wonder, are they eventually going to be caught? Are the police looking at videotapes? I actually witnessed a looting of a store. And you know the Northeast. You grew up in the Northeast, and you know where Castor Avenue is, right?
Yes,
so when
correct.
I saw the Walgreens being looted in broad daylight, I called 911. The police came. The looters were still standing there with gobs of merchandise in their arms. They looked at the police. The police looked at them and then told me, oh, we're under orders not to arrest them. So I'm still scratching my head and I can't get answers on that. But the point is, are they going to catch up with a lot of these people in light of the virus? And that's what I'm getting at. There was an order by the police commissioner, I think it was, a while back, not to arrest nonviolent offenders such as thieves and looters and shoplifters, stuff like that, drug addicts.
Correct. Yes. I think there was a couple articles that came out in the early stages of the quarantine, of the closures, where I believe the arrests in those weeks last year were in the couple hundreds down to those weeks this year were in the like teens or 20s. It was astronomical, the difference in amount of arrests that were being made. But now that things are slowly but surely starting to open back up, I do think you'll see some of those low-level offenders start to be arrested again.
The word is on the street they're not going to get arrested, so they're not afraid of anything.
Well, I believe that's only going to go so far, and then, you know, due to pushback from regular citizens, business owners, I think they're going to have to start arresting low-level offenders again.
So
how they're treated in the system may differ. They may get leniency, you know, once they come into the system. But I just don't think they're going to be able to sit back and, you know, sit on their hands and let things happen. And I think what took place, you know, during the, you know, what began as protests ultimately went up being riots and looting, I think demonstrate that when the police are given orders to sit back and not do anything, unfortunately, there's going to be people who take full advantage of that, and it can't happen. So I do think that things will get back to normal.
So, but there's going to be, I think, a need for you guys, you know, from your firm and for your skills, because they are going to catch up with a lot of these people who are criminals. These are not the protesters. These are thugs. These are criminals who are out to exploit every opportunity to get something for nothing. So it's a good thing that we're going to give your phone number out, because they'll know who to call when the police come knocking at their door.
Correct.
Yeah, I still couldn't figure it out. I said to the police that day when they wouldn't arrest the looters, I said, so if I walk into Walgreens and take a mascara, you're not going to arrest me? And they laughed. They laughed. I guess it was funny.
Crazy times we're living in right now.
Yeah, but the actual system of doing things has been affected, obviously, by the coronavirus, to the very fact that attorneys' offices were not open, and it must have affected the court system and the cases of people. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the courts in Philadelphia shut down March 17th. March 16th was a Monday. That was the last day that courts were officially open in the normal course of business. And they made an announcement late on the afternoon of the 16th that, you know, things were going to be closed. At first, they said it was going to be until April 6th. Then it was May 4th. Then it was June 1st. And it just kept getting continued. But in the meantime, all that was really happening was, if you had a client that was in jail, either on bail and or a probation or parole detainer, you could file a bail motion to try to get the bail lowered, and then you had to get the response from the district attorney's office, and then you would submit that electronically, and a judge would review it. Same thing with a detainer motion, whereas normally when you file one of those, you're able to go into court, bring the client's family in, explain, you know, who they are, where they'd be living, and it's more of an in-person, intimate experience, as opposed to the way it was happening the last few months, which is just on the papers.
Did it happen? Was it effective?
Yes, it happened. It just didn't happen the way it normally would. You know, it probably took a little longer for some motions to get responded to. And there was some confusion in the court system over how things were supposed to be done. Eventually, there became a process that everyone was familiar with. But those first few weeks were definitely confusing for everybody, I believe.
Yeah, it may
what
not
we're
be
doing the, right now.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry.
No, you're more important.
So what we began to do in June is we're now statusing cases to give them dates where they will be heard in court. For example, just this morning I had a hearing where we statused it by what's called Zoom. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It became popular mm-hmm. during this whole pandemic. It's basically like a video conference where we, as the defense attorneys, are on there, the prosecution's on there, the judge is on there. Everyone's asked their status for the case. And for the most part, they're giving new dates out in September. So in practicality, if a client is out on the street, in other words, if they're out on bail, all that really is happening at this point is their case is getting continued.
Right.
What's troublesome for the defense side is if you have a client who's in custody, whether their bail is too high and they can't afford it, or whether they're being held on a detainer and a new case, the issue is, since March 17th, the time has been excluded from what's called a, you know, speedy trial or pre-trial incarceration.
I don't think that's fair, but that's only me.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, I had a status of case this week. I was retained by a man's wife last week, and which that is the case this week, where he's been in jail since January on just this case. And he's not going to have a preliminary hearing until September. So that'll be 8 months that he'll have been sitting in jail without even having a preliminary hearing.
Something's wrong with that.
Tough situation.
It's wrong. It's wrong. I mean, there would have been, 365 days in which to execute all this? And now
there's 365 days to take a case to trial under Rule 600A, which is the speedy trial rule. But that doesn't include time that's excluded by the court or time that's excluded by the defense. There's another rule, 600B, where if 180 days pretrial lapse where someone's incarcerated, then the defense can bring a what's called a 600B motion to try to get the bail lowered to nominal bail and have the individual released. But unfortunately, because of the suspension of time under Rule 600, which was mandated by the Supreme Court, these last few months are not going to count towards either speedy trial or the Rule 600B, which is the 180 days pretrial incarceration. So there's definitely some.
In the event they find these people innocent, what will happen because of all the time they spend in jail? Anything?
Nothing. I mean, it'll just be, if someone's acquitted, if someone's found not guilty by a judge or a jury, then that'll be the end of the case. But there won't be any other recourse.
So they can't get their time or money back.
Correct.
I was just thinking back with the question I asked you before about the lootings and the rioting and all that sort of stuff. This isn't going to stop. We're probably going to see more of this. I hate to say that from everything I read, and I hope they're wrong. So with the city taking the stance at the time, don't arrest the looters, how would you handle that when you start getting the phone calls? Because eventually they are going to be arrested.
Right. So I think there's going to be – I think in practicality what will happen is two things. One, now that we're getting back to – it's slowly but surely starting to get back to business as usual. And by, I believe, September, it should be back to business as usual. You figure that, especially in Philadelphia, the court system on a regular day is inundated with just an extreme amount of cases. When you take cases that were supposed to happen from March all the way through to August and you try to pile those on top of what was already planned for the fall, I think in practicality there will be certain favorable offers made to defendants to try to dispose of cases. Regarding specifically the riots and the looting that took place, I do believe that those cases will be viewed on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, for example, there's a young man I've been speaking to the last few days. I believe I'll be meeting with him in my office this Thursday. He's in his mid-20s. He works two jobs. He has no record. He was down there at the protest. He says he was, kind of filming some things to post on his YouTube channel. And, somehow, some way he went up in the Macy's as it was being looted. And obviously he shouldn't have been in there, and there's no question that he shouldn't have been in there. But that being said, if he was in there just filming things as he claims he was, and as he says he has video proof that he was, then I think somebody like that, the district attorney's office will take a look at and say, okay, was he in there stealing? Was he in there, fighting with the police? Was he in there lighting fires? Or was he just in there kind of swept up in the moment and otherwise a good person with no record and no, and working two jobs? Is this somebody who we want to, jam up and have some sort of permanent scar on his record? I think they'll look at those cases individually, and the flip side as well. I think they'll look at people who, if they were down there, if the cops can identify that they were, breaking windows, jumping in, stealing boxes, and if you look at their criminal records and it seems like that's what they do, I don't think those people would be treated as favorably. But it's not just going to be incumbent upon the district attorney's office. It's also going to be incumbent upon the defense attorney to make the case for their individual client. Okay, look, I understand what was happening down there. Wasn't good. I understand that maybe my client shouldn't have done XYZ. However, this is who he or she is. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking you to look at this differently than some other people who were involved in things. And then you have the other end. There was an article not too long ago. I don't know if you saw it, but two police cruisers were lit on fire, and the FBI was able to look at the video that I believe was taken by helicopter or some other
media. I actually watched it. I watched it in progress.
Right.
It was online.
And so they were able to, it seems like they were able to track her down, arrest her, and she's sitting in federal custody right now being detained pre-trial. And somebody like her is going to have a very different experience than, someone who was just down there and maybe got swept up in the emotion of it.
As
she should have.
Yeah. One of the local news stations had a helicopter and drones flying over, the looting and the destruction and so forth and so on in Philadelphia, and had a live feed going 24 hours a day on Facebook. So, I was looking at it. People's faces were as clear as day. People were pulling up in vans to not just go in and take a pair of sneakers, but to actually unload merchandise, or load in merchandise.
Sure.
But when I watched the police cruisers on fire and so forth and so on, it goes far beyond a peaceful protest. And I don't believe that just my personal feeling and from what we've seen, the original protesters are not those who did all that destruction and looting for the most part.
I agree. And another thing regarding these cases, I do think it will be for a large majority of these people who were arrested for burglary and criminal trespass regarding, entering stores, breaking into stores and whatnot. I do believe that it would be beneficial to both the defense and the prosecution to try to work toward a favorable resolution, because I think from a prosecutor's standpoint, I was a prosecutor in Philadelphia for 6.5 years before I switched sides and do defense work. And I can tell you, those cases are going to be tough to prosecute. If you have 3 or 4 cops that were going in and grabbing, 25, 30 people, it's going to be tough for them to remember and point out individually, okay, John Smith was doing X, Jane Doe was doing Y. And I think they will be tough cases to prosecute. And that's not any reflection on the police. Again, by the time I think we're given the go-ahead, it's, a lot of things were already out of hand. But from a practical standpoint, I think they'll be tough to prove in court on an individual basis.
Well, you have your work cut out for you. We're going to take a break in a minute. I just want to say, you're probably too young to remember Kent State. Does that mean anything to you?
Sounds familiar. I couldn't speak.
Look it up after we're done. Look it up. Things in history that we learn from. It was an incident that involved the National Guard. It involved shooting, this and that, at Kent State, which was born out of a protest. And innocent kids were shot to death because they were there to see what was going on. So rule of thumb, you see a crowd, go the other way. That's what I learned from Kent State. You must look it up.
Sure.
All right. Anyway, we're going to be right back with Thomas Clemens from Goldstein Mehta. Phone number 267-225-2545. And you don't charge anything if they call up and just ask a few questions, right?
That's correct. We give a free consultation. We'd be happy to take any calls and answer any questions, and we'll let you know what we can and can't do for you.
Great. Okay, we'll be right back right after this.
The award-winning criminal lawyers that always fight for you, Goldstein Mehta LLC, thank the Ask the Expert show for choosing their firm as the experts when it comes to criminal law. Goldstein Mehta are Philadelphia criminal defense lawyers who represent individuals and organizations who are charged with crimes or under investigation in all types of state and federal criminal matters at the trial level and on appeal. If you are facing charges, call or text 267-225-2545 for a free criminal defense strategy session. Their attorneys are licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and routinely appear in the Philadelphia courts, as well as in the surrounding counties of Delaware, Bucks, Montgomery, and Chester. They handle preliminary hearings, grand jury investigations, pretrial motions such as motions to suppress, motions to quash, motions to dismiss, and speedy trial motions, as well as bench and jury trials. The law firm of Goldstein Mehta have had success both in obtaining dismissals before trial and acquittals at trial in front of judges and juries. If you are facing charges, call or text 267-225-2545 for a free criminal defense strategy session.
Welcome back to Ask the Experts. I'm Lee Richards, and our guest today, Thomas Clemens from Goldstein Mehta, and we appreciate your being with us. Phone number again for them is 267-225-2545. Very interesting conversation, Thomas, and I'm so glad that you're here. Let's find out also, you know, people who are listening and they have a loved one or perhaps themselves who are in need of your services, what different jurisdictions do you practice in? I know things vary not only from state to state, city to city, county to county. So what are the differences in the way the cases are handled in these jurisdictions, and how do you deal with all that?
Sure. So we handle cases in Pennsylvania, in New Jersey, as well as federal court. Now, for the most part, people in the criminal justice system, they are arrested in the state court system. So I'll leave the federal conversation to the side, and we'll just deal with Pennsylvania, New Jersey. Regarding the initial phases of any criminal arrest, the difference in Pennsylvania versus New Jersey right off the bat is the bail system, okay? New Jersey just passed a Bail Reform Act a few years ago where they don't really set monetary bail. In very rare instances, they can, but for the most part, they don't have bail, and there is a presumption of release in New Jersey unless you're facing murder or another charge that carries a possible life sentence, such as a rape or, you know, some sort of other serious sexual assault crime. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be held pretrial in New Jersey. In New Jersey, what they do is the state, if they wish to, they can move for what's called pretrial detention. They need to file a notice, and then you have within a few days after the individual's arrested, you have what's called a detention hearing. In a detention hearing, the state needs to prove by clear and convincing evidence three things. One, that the person's a risk of flight or that they're unlikely to appear in court. Two, that the protection or safety of the community could be jeopardized by this individual's release. And three, that the person stands the chance to try to obstruct or attempt to obstruct the criminal justice process, meaning interfere with the witnesses, interfere with the victims. And again, that is they need to prove that by what's called clear and convincing evidence, which is a legal standard. If you had to look at it on a percentage of 0 to 100, it's about 75% that they would need to prove that by. And other than that, again, there is a presumption of release in New Jersey. That's a statute that just came down over there a few years ago. Pennsylvania, on the other hand, has bail. So when someone's arrested in Pennsylvania, they can either have what's called ROR bail, meaning release on their own recognizance. They understand they need to be there. Unsecured bail, meaning a monetary bail is set, but the person doesn't need to actually put up money. And if they fail to appear, then they could be held liable for whatever that monetary bail amount was. Or what happens in most instances is they'll have a bail amount set and they have to post 10% of that amount.
Right.
And in the case of a homicide or some other serious cases, you can be held without bail in Pennsylvania. But there are two of the differences right off the bat in the initial phase of a criminal case between New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Regarding sentencings, in New Jersey, they normally give out flat sentences. Both states have probation. If you get sentenced to probation, it's pretty much the same in both states. But regarding actual jail sentences, New Jersey gives out a flat sentence. If you are going to do county jail time, the max you can do in a county jail in New Jersey is 364 days. In Pennsylvania, it's 23 months. Anything above 23 months or 2 years in Pennsylvania, you're going to a state prison. Whereas in New Jersey, anything above 364 days, you're going to the state prison. And New Jersey has what's called flat sentences, meaning you might get a 5 flat, whereas Pennsylvania, they have a minimum and a maximum. So your maximum has to be at least twice your minimum in Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, if it's a state prison sentence, you have to do the minimum of your number. If it's a county jail sentence, you could be released earlier than the minimum if the paroling judge agrees to it.
Thank you. We only have a couple minutes left. This is just flying by. So we want to make sure that people understand, what would happen if they hire your firm, Goldstein Mehta, for themselves or a loved one facing criminal charges. What's going to happen?
Sure. So I think when you deal with us, one of the things you're going to get right off the bat is honesty. And what I mean by that is we get probably a dozen phone calls a day of people who they want to hire a lawyer to do, X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3. And there are certain things that we cannot do. And when I say we, I don't just mean we at Goldstein Med. I mean any attorney can't do. For example, if someone is in on a state parole detainer, the state parole board determines whether or not someone's detainer is going to be released. There's really not much that a criminal defense attorney can do with the state parole board. There's times when people call us, maybe their loved one's been sitting in prison for a couple years and they all of a sudden want to file an appeal or they want to bring some sort of motion to try to get them out. Well, if there's something that, cannot be done, we're going to tell them right off the bat, look, we can't help you. And if we can help them, then we're going to let them know that too. Look, this is what we can do for you. This is what we think, the chances are, and we'll let them know that. For example, I have a guy right now who I'm handling his open case. And while the open case is a very serious matter, his level of culpability in it is minimal. And I'm confident that we'll prevail at a trial. But that being said, he's being supervised by a judge for another case, and he's being held on a probation detainer in addition to the open matter. Mm-hmm. He and his family want to hire me to try to get the detainer lifted. And I'm telling them, look, save your money. It's a waste of time. You're not going to, even though I think we have a good shot at trial, the judge is not going to lift your detainer. And to spend the money to try to do it is just not worth it.
So you spell it out.
We're going to be honest with people when we tell them that.
That's really good. That's something to know. All right, finally, let's give them the contact information again and tell them what's going to happen when they call. We have 1 minute.
Sure. So when you call us, either we'll answer the phone, or if we're in the middle of doing something, then our receptionist will answer. They'll take your name, they'll take your phone number, they'll take any other contact information you want to provide. What we do ask is that you give a brief description of what your case is about or your loved one's case is about. Let us know the county it's in. Again, Pennsylvania or New Jersey, which county it is, what the charges are, if you know that. And we'll call you back as soon as possible. And like I said earlier, we're gonna let you know what we can do. We're gonna let you know what we can't do. Consultation is free with us, and we like talking to people. We like being able to help people when we can. And when people do retain us, another thing that we offer, every single one of our clients has our own personal cell phone numbers. You are never going to be wondering what's going on with your case. You're never going to not hear back from us. That's one thing we pride ourselves on, is constant client contact and communication.
That's excellent. It's reassuring. Just final question, just real brief. I've heard on the street that there are a lot of people who have warrants, especially bench warrants, where they went to court, they actually forfeited bail, and then they disappeared. Is there hope for these people? You go so far as to go to court and get an attorney, and then you go and you disappear.
So yeah, there's definitely hope for them.
What do they do
in a situation like that?
Is that going to get them put in jail?
No, I mean, I think what you want to do in that situation, and we deal with these calls all the time. You want to call a lawyer, and we can help you surrender yourself on the bench warrant. And in certain instances, we're able to have somebody surrender and re-release on a bench warrant the same day. If not,
great.
If they mandate that the person be held, then you normally have a hearing within 3 business days, and we'll be representing them at that to try to get them re-released, and then we'll face the case after that.
Thank you so much for checking in today, Thomas Clemens from Goldstein Mehta, the website goldsteinmehta.com. That's an easy one. Phone number 267-225-2545. If you have a question, feel free to call up. And we appreciate your time today, Thomas.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You are welcome. And thank you for listening to Ask the Experts.
Thanks for listening to the Ask the Experts show today. Join us again next week for more specialists in their field of legal health, financial, and home improvement.